You are listening to KDRTLP 95.7 in Davis, California. My name is Lois Richter, and the program is That's Life. My interview today is with Ray Franklin, and we had a little technical glitch, so you're coming in on it about 2 minutes into the interview.
Here we go, where you were very timid. You were new at the whole thing. You were worried about how you looked and how you sounded, and you've really blossomed it. And you're one of the things that impresses everyone. If it impresses me as much as it impresses everyone, you're such a detailed person. You listen, you ask important questions. You're not afraid to, they learned this on Zoom Test Kitchen really soon. And I think it helped you because they were so welcome. I think you finally felt comfortable driving the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's normal for me. And when I went into this new community, I was a little daunted by all the tech stuff. But as far as the people stuff, no problem. So on Zoom Test Kitchen, I will definitely ask a question. And that's good. That's good.
Well, the other thing is that you did not join the competition to buy more crap.
That's true.
You were not afraid of saying, listen, I have a simple system. I have a small group. I have an important, it's important to us. And I need to how to make it work here. Mm-hmm. Some people are intimidated about saying that. And that's why they're showing off their high-end microphones and they're showing off their fancy backgrounds and they're investing way more than they should be because there's some sort of a guy competition. Guys do that, you know.
So you think of the guy thing, huh?
Guys do that.
There is a bit of difference in personality. And then there's also the willingness to ask a question, even if I know the answer, but I see somebody else out there in the audience and I can tell by their glazed eyes that they're not getting it. And they're not getting it and they're not going to speak up and ask about it because they don't want to feel stupid. And so I do a lot of that. And sometimes people get annoyed and say, well, Lois, you already know the answer to that. Absolutely true. But explain it for my friend who doesn't know the answer.
You're driving the bus.
At least I'm not kicking people out. Oh, well.
I've always been impressed from the outset. I thought we've always got along very well from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's good. So I want my listeners to know that the voice that you're hearing, other than my usual voice, is Ray Franklin, and he is joining us from Florida. And both of us have been on a community called Office Hours and After Hours. There's also another community called the Zoom Test Kitchen. You've heard me talk about that one before, too. And that's how Ray and I have met each other. And so that's who it is. We'll do the opening for the show. We'll tack that on the front. But we sort of jumped in, didn't we? That's what we do. So I am going to describe Ray because this is a radio show and they can't see you. He is a gentleman with blonde or white hair.
It's more white than blonde.
Did you used to be blonde or did you used to have a brown hair?
No, it was a brownish, reddish brown, but it's pretty white now.
It's kind of faded out there, yeah. So he has a modest haircut. His hair is not terribly long, not terribly short. He's not bald. He's not bushy. He has no braids. He does have beard and mustache well trimmed. You can just barely notice that there's a little frosting of white there where the beard and mustache are. There's nothing that's going to get in the way of eating pie. And then he has lovely glasses. I really like the shape of your glasses. They are black and sort of rounded rectangles, but they're nice. They make a statement. I'm glasses, but they also don't hide your eyes. So very nice. Now today he happens to be wearing a shockingly red shirt, and his background is shockingly bright blue. I guess I'd say it's more of a sky blue faded into gray blue. But a well-designed set, very minimalistic, nothing like mine where I've got all these shelves full of artwork behind me. No, no, no. Ray is. Now, Ray, how did you end up with that look? And that's a look that you have on all the programs I've seen you on. How'd that look come about?
My background is television production, and so I'm very aware of how things look on camera. I have, during the pandemic, become a presentation coach where I'm teaching people how to do their best on camera in this virtual world. And too many of them, especially at the start of the whole pandemic thing, had bookcases. They took bookcases from the internet, and they were all competing with how many books they could have behind them in their virtual backgrounds. And I knew none of them read the books. And I knew other people were having the ocean behind them, and I knew they probably weren't on the sands in Fiji. So I tried to explain it. And I'm an expert on green screen. I know everything about it. The backside of this blue backdrop is green. And I was using green screen early, but I have the lighting for green screen, and it takes a special quality of lighting to pull it off. So to sell the point to my people, keep the background simple. And that's the purpose for that.
So let's define a few jargon terms for the listeners who might not know them. I also come from a television production. I know what a green screen is. And so I will try and explain it. You tell me if I get it wrong. A green screen is literally a flat wall that is painted a particular shade of green. It's sort of halfway between lime green and Kelly green, but in there. Things that are not usually found on a human body. Okay, so you want some color that is distinctive. And then what happens is that video signal comes into the computer, and the computer says, anytime there's something that is this particular shade of green, we're going to erase that from the image, and then we'll overlay that image on top of whatever else is the behind thing. So your background could be, as you say, could be Hawaii. And the it could be still, it could be video, which is kind of strange. And that's how it works. Now, the problem is if one does not have a good computer that can handle green screen, or they don't actually have a green screen, then when I hold my hand up and spread my fingers, you might see between the fingers the bookcase, whereas at the tip of the fingers you'd seen whatever's being replaced. So Ray has an actual real green screen, and that means the replacement is very precise. Did I get it right, Ray?
You got it exactly correct. And it is that unique color of green that is, as you said, is not represented in something I might wear on my face. So it makes the separation good. But you have to be a good few feet away from the green screen so that the green screen can be lit separately from you and your face. And then the light bouncing off the green screen should not glow on the back of your head. It makes it very, very awkward. And so your head has halos around it. And the part that I'm most engaged with my clients is they just don't see it. They think they're on a phone call that just happens to have video. Mm. And so they don't care how they look. They don't care what they look at. One of the examples that I give is Dr. Fauci. God bless him for what he does, but he testified for 8 hours, 2 days straight, talking to Congress, looking down at the TV monitors below him instead of at the camera where people are watching. Mm-hmm. And it's embarrassing. So that's the element that I try to help. Keep the background simple and give your eye contact so that the people can actually see you.
So when we're doing Zoom calls, and most people these days are, I think, they're not necessarily going to want to go into production mode and make a set and have, you know, buy a green screen or even paint the wall green and then light it evenly from the side and, you know, all that stuff. So without doing all that stuff, I think what happens is people think that a virtual background is going to act like a green screen, and it doesn't. And the problem, of course, is with a virtual background, if I were to take my phone and hold it up, it would disappear into the background. You wouldn't be able to see it because the computer is trying really hard to separate me from the background. But if I don't, if I'm not a contiguous line, in other words, if I put my hand up off to the side so it's not attached to the body, that may disappear. So it's not rocket science, but it's also not popsicles.
Sadly, Lois, the people that have been the worst at the virtual backgrounds are the Zoom people. We've watched all kinds of Zoom experts come and join us on Zoom Test Kitchen or on various other shows, and their background and their logo, Zoom logo background is awful. And it's a virtual background. So I suggest people do something very simple. Go to a corner of a room, because chances are there are not going to be any pictures in the way. There's not going to be any trees growing out of your head. Go to a plain wall corner of your room. Be about 3 or 4 feet from the wall and use that as your background. And that way that there's no argument. The focus will be on you and not on how crazy you look or, you know, whether you have the right books in your bookcase.
Yeah, a lot of it is it is how you look. And the easiest way to do that is you've got a Zoom account. That means you can find that little orange button that says start, and you can make a meeting with yourself and just record it, play it back, see what you look like. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't know that was going to show up. And you can self aggrandize. Well, that's not the right word, but you can make it so that you look better than you looked before you analyzed things. And the thing,
Lois, we are our own worst critics. And so if we take the time to do what you suggest, to record a minute, mm-hmm. and then play it back, it's like looking in the mirror for the first time. Mm-hmm. One of the people that I've worked with for years is David Novak. David Novak is the former chairman of Yum Brands, the I don't know, multi-billion dollar company, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, KFC. And David worked his way up through the system. And I, for 23 years, I was a coach for the presenters at the corporate events. David did an interview the other day on CNBC, and I saw it and I could not believe it. Nowadays, they bring a van to your house that's got a camera and it's got all the test equipment and everything else. And he spent the whole interview looking above the lens at himself because he couldn't see the person interviewing him and he couldn't find the camera. So he looked at himself. I sent him a picture of it. I said, David, you're on TV. If you were in a TV studio, you'd know what to look at. He said, yep. And he's in the last 3 days, he does a lot of interviews. In the last 3 days, he's done a lot better.
And one easy thing to do if you're in that situation and you can't figure out where the heck the camera is, get out a sticky note and stick it right below that camera lens so that you can find it. You're right there. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's my note.
Uh-huh. I've got a little hole punch that is big enough to punch a hole in that so it goes right around the camera. Yeah.
It's not normal human activity to stare at an innocuous place. Now, I have in front of me, I'm actually looking at you mm-hmm. in a teleprompter. So I'm actually not faking it. I'm actually looking right at you. And my camera is behind the lens, mm-hmm. the mirror that I'm looking at. And so I know to make excellent eye contact.
And that's because you're a professional. I, on the other hand, being a non-professional, or at least not professional like you are, what I do is I take my Zoom window. Now, for the listeners, this is a radio show. But the way we do it is Ray and I are on a Zoom call, looking at each other, talking to each other. And then I will take that recording, actually those two recordings, his voice and my voice, and we will go and we will make a radio show out of that. But what I do is I shrink down the size of the Zoom window so that we're stacked. You're on top, I'm below them. And then I put that up as close to the camera as I can. So now this is where the camera is. And if I'm looking directly at that, it looks like I'm looking directly at you. And this is where his eye is. So I'm looking at him now. Now that's not much difference. It's not enough difference that most people would notice. I'm sure Ray notices.
Right. It's called parallax. And that's the best way to do it. The second best way is to put a big monitor, a TV screen, mm-hmm. behind the camera. And that works well as well.
I'm thinking about getting a little camera that can just sort of hang down in front of the screen. I'm debating whether I'm going to do that or not. Right now, what I have gotten is a holder for my phone. I have an iPhone, really good camera. And so I'm thinking that I will put that up there and try doing that, see what it looks like. But again, if I put that right in front of where I would be seeing you, then I wouldn't see you. So I'll work on that.
It just takes practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's back up. Your name is Ray Franklin. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Any relation to Ben?
Oh, we always thought so. But in this day of DNA testing and what have you, it's quite positive that I'm not.
Okay. Yeah, I do genealogy and family history and stuff. So I'm always curious. It's like, now, what did that name mean? How did you get that? And so I always ask my guests something about their surnames. And
my wife is very proud. She just got a certificate proving that she is a direct descendant of my brain, Roger Williams. And so the Roger Williams Foundation, she had to prove her genealogy, and she's a direct descendant of Roger Williams.
And who's Roger Williams?
Roger Williams came over on the Mayflower, one of the very early settlers, and he's their operation is based in Rhode Island, and my wife is from there.
Cool, that's cool. Yeah. Do you know what Franklin means? Does that have a meaning?
No, I've not gone that far.
So Richter, which is my surname, is the German word for judge. So that means at some point in the past, when people were accumulating surnames in Germany, one of my ancestors was a judge. And so his family became the Richter family. Doesn't mean they stayed judges. My ancestors that came over here were all farmers, poor German farmers, but that's okay. Farming is good.
In my early radio days, I was assigned various names. So I've been Jerry Goodwin, and I've been various other names. So I don't stick to the naming issue very very close, because I have many personas.
And what were you born?
I was born Ray Franklin, Raymond Wesley Franklin, because of my grandfather was a Methodist minister. Wow. And so there's a religious connection there. Mm-hmm. But the radio shows, in some cases, I inherited somebody's shift who had just established themselves, and I took over.
The name of the show and the name of the person. Why not?
You know, I got pushed into there. Yeah. Rock and roll radio and country radio. I did about a year of country radio on WPAS in Zephyr Hills, Florida. You're a radio person as well. You'll appreciate this. I signed the station on every morning at sunrise. This is one of those stations that was not a clear channel. And I was going to college at the time. So I would have to get up very, very early and drive 40 minutes in the fog down through the holler and what have you to go to this little home that was turned into a radio station. And I was late this one morning, so I ran in. I turned on the record player. I don't know if I have to explain that, but the Star Spangled Banner is what started every morning show. So I put the record on, knew that when it would start, ran out to the back, to the little shed in the back, which was the transmitter building.
You flipped the switch.
And I pushed the button and started the transmitter. And just at that time, the Star Spangled Banner started. I felt so good because there was a little monitor in that transmitter room. Went back to the house. Doors were locked.
Oh, no.
I left the keys in. I was in such a hurry. So this was a dilemma. Now, we probably had an audience of 650 people at that hour of the morning. It was a very small town north of Tampa. And I knew the chief engineer was an early riser. So I ran back to the transformer and turned it off. Now, I had a FCC third class license. So all of a sudden, I did it twice. And I had to log it as problems with the transmitter. General manager comes in his robe and his slippers, and he comes in the front door and he comes out the back door and he yells at me. He said, "What's the matter?" I said, "It won't stay on." He said, "I'll take care of it. You go and start the radio show."
"It won't stay on. Ray, that's a bouncer if ever I heard one."
It was a stressful time. I was making my mark in radio at the time.
How old were you?
Oh, I was actually, it was funny because it was probably 20, but at 16 and 17, I was on the largest radio station in Miami, the Clear Channel station, WQAM, and we had a million listeners. So I was not nervous about it. That was my job in college and I needed the money. So that's how I solved it.
A couple of times you have used a jargon term, a radio term that people would like to get explained. What is a clear channel?
The radio frequencies are designated by the Federal Communications Commission. And the frequency is a certain bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And AM radio, which people don't even remember anymore, but AM radio was like 560 to 1450, something like that. And so there were certain frequencies on that band that were called clear channel. They were 50,000 watts, and they were able to broadcast large areas without interruption.
Day and night.
That was
day and night.
Day and night, 24 hours a day. That's the key. And the radio station in Tampa, WPAS, the full-time voice of Pasco County, by the way, that was a daytime station because its frequency would have stepped on clear channel stations. So they had to turn off at sunset and on at sunrise. That's something to do with the ionosphere. Apparently, radio frequencies in that spectrum bounce off the ionosphere and can travel for long, long distances. And so the clear channels were protected because of that. I think they're only...
It's a physics thing now.
Yeah, I think there's only 20 or so of them. They're all in the internet now, so it's not that big. But KDKA, which was the first radio station in the country in Philadelphia, that was one that people used to listen to from all over the world. Mm-hmm. When the atmosphere was just right.
Right.
It was quite fun.
Yeah, we had one in Chicago that was like that. The
WLS.
World's largest store.
WLS. I listened to it all over the country. Yeah.
Whereas here, our radio station is KDRT. We are a local, low-power public access station, which means that our transmitter is about the power of a light bulb, you know, and it gets just barely past the edges of our little town, which is fine, which is wonderful. And then we started streaming on the internet, and now we have listeners all over the world.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
That's amazing. Absolutely. It's still amazing.
And Don Shore and I, when the station started, I started doing this show, That's Life. And Don Shore, who is the local plant expert, he owns a nursery in town. And he and I had been previously doing shows occasionally on my television station program, which predates the radio station. And so we were used to working together. And I said, "Well, so Don, are you going to want to do a radio show?" He said, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And so I said, "Do you want to do one alone or you want to do one with me?" He said, "I better do one with you." So we've been doing this since the station started. And at the time, this is like 16, 17 years ago, I was teaching how to design websites and you know, HTML and all that other stuff. And there had just become this new weird thing, RSS. What? Well, it turns out that before there were, before iTunes existed, before all these other podcast stuff existed, when it was just getting started, I knew about it because I was teaching this stuff. And so I said, Don, let's have an RSS feed. And so we did. And there was, you know, three or four little programs that you could register with and stuff. And then when iTunes came on, they sort of accumulated all the stuff from those little programs. So our show, the Davis Garden Show, is in the first batch of things on iTunes and has been going forever since then. So we predate iTunes. I think it's just so cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, it's fun. Anyway, so before we had that, we had, as I said, I was designing websites and teaching people that. So I made a website for Don on his Redwood Barn Nursery. And then we made a separate one for Davis Garden Show. So if you ever go to davisgardenshow.com, what you'll find there are all of the MP4 files, MP3 files, I think they are.
Right.
For all the years. I think we're missing like three of the early ones because we didn't get them recorded. But this was before the station was doing any of it. And we were just doing it on our own. It's so fun.
Did you have sponsors? Did you have, other than the his garden shop?
No sponsors. There is no sponsors. Well, actually, that's not true. Right now, you could go to kdrt.org and become a sponsor. But that's a fairly recent thing. All of the stuff is mostly shows produced by volunteers. And then the station pays for a few, you know, of the big names to be broadcast occasionally and stuff. But we have almost two-thirds of our named broadcast times are locally produced, which is pretty astonishing.
That's so community radio. I had always hoped that I would buy a local community radio station. I think they're so valuable. Mm-hmm. And that now, because of the internet, it's not the cash cow that it used to be. But I did spend some time knocking on doors at car dealers and appliance dealers and what have you to get them to buy radio time. And I was very successful at convincing them the target market that particular local radio station provided. And it was a lot of fun. Then I'd help them build the commercials, and then we'd put it on the air and they'd get business or not. And that was a fun part of community radio. Very, very much fun. And the farm and market reports. And then we did the interview the kids at school. I'm talking to somebody now who's doing radio, a radio broadcast of the high school football team. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go on the internet here very shortly, and they want to add cameras. So I have a strong affinity for local radio.
Yeah, it's lots of fun. And it's fun to do. It's fun to listen to. And the idea of it is so powerful. I mean, I don't know what other country you would have where you would have what we've got here. All these little tiny towns just making their own radio stations. And it's gotten harder and harder with the FCC rules. And the we started at 101.5. And then a commercial channel up the valley decided they wanted to increase their signal. And so we got wiped out, basically. We were told, well, you can't broadcast anymore because they need that place. And we went, well, what are we going to do? And so we had quite a fight on our hands to get our channel moved. And now we're at 95.7. And so it's fine, but it's like the priority is always the commercial channel, which is annoying. Yeah. I don't think the ham radios got they didn't get wiped out by commercial radios, but we're sharing the same bandwidth. And now, though, we've got the internet. So as long as the internet providers aren't taking over and saying which signals can go through and which can't, well, we'll still have some way of communicating. So,
are you ready for your phone call from Spotify to get a $100 million contract to broadcast your podcast on Spotify? They're the ones that gave $200 million to Joe Rogan.
I have no idea who Spotify is, why I would pay the money, and who Joe Rogan is. So let's just move on.
No, you wouldn't pay them. You wouldn't pay them money. They're an aggregator like Clear Channel in the radio business, but they're an aggregator of podcasts and streaming music. They're like iTunes.
Well, you just said Clear Channel was a channel that could broadcast day and night. Now, what are you talking about?
Clear Channel is now a corporate entity, as well as the definition of the frequency. Clear Channel is one, like iHeartRadio. Those are radio mega companies where they buy up local radio stations, and then they put them all in, and they put them on the internet. Right.
And then they buy up local stations, and then the content switches from being local to being whatever genre they decide they want to put in there.
Sadly, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know about them. But I try to ignore that stuff as much as possible. All right. Well, enough about this. You've done radio shows. You are now doing coaching for people who are doing Zoom things and other stuff, I assume. What have you done for paid work most of the time? Was it mostly radio, or did you do something else? You wrote a book, On-the-Job Speech Training, Public Speaking Tools to Build Your Professional Success by Ray Franklin. All right. The 8-Minute Speech Coach. He's an author. I should have known. He's an author.
So as the producer of multi-million dollar corporate events over the last 40 years, the car dealers, the Cadillac used to bring the car dealers from all over the country and take them to Hawaii or to Palm Springs or something and entertain them and put on, you know, spend millions of dollars on big name A-list talent and crazy sets and all kinds of things. And then they started traveling them overseas. Well, these people would often take a product manager who started with a pharmaceutical product right out of college, shepherded it through the system, got it approved with the FDA, and then was told, oh, by the way, we're having 800 people at our corporate event in Hawaii, and you're going to have 45 minutes to tell them everything you know about the product because it is the future of our company.
That's a little scary.
And so at that point, most of these people have not had any speech coach training. Mm-hmm. They've not had any platform training unless they've gone to very elite schools or even in some legal professions are sadly lacking in it. So my job during that time, other than producing the event, was making sure the executives did a good job. And we had singers and dancers and sound effects and explosions and all kinds of theatrical things happening. And so they had to be comfortable with the technology as well as sticking to their message. Mm-hmm. So my job was to coach them in a very short period of time to be successful on stage. And I've just transferred that training that came from this book, On the Job Speech Training. I've now got a chapter on virtual meetings, just as virtual meetings are starting to ebb and flow away. But the training is principally the same. Mm-hmm. You want to focus on your message, get rid of the distractions, and be successful. Here's the premise. The premise is that if you can tell your corporate story at Thanksgiving dinner to the family for 45 minutes without PowerPoint, without props, without fireworks, singers and dancers and what have you, then you are a content expert. Mm-hmm. So you are ready for me to teach you how to take those skills public. And I do the basics are all done in 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. The rest of it, you work on your own. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun. I've got so many letters of so many people that have come through the corporate ranks, gone up and run billion-dollar businesses who've said, my ability to be successful in the boardroom in the training room or in front of Wall Street is largely due to the training and the confidence that I've given them. So that's what has been the most fun in my life.
How long ago did you publish that book?
This was 10 years ago. And it's basically...
When did you start doing your training?
Oh, I started training in 1972 because I produced a lot of material for corporate. I Eastern Airlines, all their training programs, Burger King, all their training programs. So I was in the production business, and just in the mid to late 70s, these big extravaganzas were all produced by the advertising agency because they had the money. And so our business of actual professional meeting planning was a new area that was just getting to be professional, and there's certification for meeting planners, and we're a part of that industry. So I've been doing that for 50 years.
Are you ever going to retire? Or did you retire?
This has brought, I'm 76.
Yeah.
I'm holding a conversation so far. How am I doing?
No, but seriously, I mean, if you've done a business for that long, at some point you might say, that's enough of that. I think I'll move on.
It was the case until COVID, which put me in this studio, which looks like, any one of the overindulgent members of our office hours click. And it allows me to do all of that without getting on a plane and going to Dubai for 3 weeks for a corporate event. My first on-site event is coming up in August. It's a 20-some-odd-year client, and they are doing their first live meeting, and they've got a couple of new executives. And so I'm going next week. I'm going to the corporate offices to start the training process. Then I will hold the dress rehearsals on-site in Houston and be able to remind them of all the things that they've been working on, mm-hmm. so that they can be successful.
Mm-hmm. Do you do, this sounds kind of strange. If I were doing that, I would find somebody who would want to have those people on for an interview, and then I'd send them the recording of the interview, and they could see how well they're doing. Do you ever do any of that stuff?
Yes, because for a period of time, because I came out of television news as well, for a period of time, I taught people executives how to answer aggressive press questions, mm-hmm. and press conferences. So, yes, I did that for a while, but I really prefer to stick to the live meeting event, whether it's live or hybrid or virtual.
But for their training, don't you record them?
Oh, yes, I record them. But they record themselves more than anything. I actually get new clients by recording them live on TV or in a podcast that I watch. And I say, hey, Bozo, you weren't really doing a good job here. Mm-hmm. And they see it and they go. There's one very, very, very successful presenter who thinks that there should be lots of animation in podcasting. And he does this. And I captured a picture of him. And you can describe what you see.
I see your hands very, very, very large. And your face is sort of stuck between them. So I can't see you very much, but I see your hands very clearly.
This is scary. And he thinks this ought to happen. And I try to explain to him, so I recorded a little bit of it because he gets a lot of money to hold this seminar. And I recorded a little bit and shared it with him. I said, you can get the action and the excitement. You know, I keep my hands in the picture. I don't chop myself off. But this is in this very intimate world we're in, putting your hands in people's faces is not a good idea.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I definitely talk with my hands, but when I do it, it's
on this plane.
Behind my chin.
Right.
It's behind my chin. It's not out. I'm not grabbing you in the camera. I'm like this. Unless, of course, it's something that is intentional and it's humor and it's, or it's like, and here's the camera and I'm pointing to the camera with my finger. My finger is now covering up my face, but that's okay. It was 30 seconds and it was intentional. But if you're trying to get across a message, then you want people to hear what you're saying, but not be distracted by what you're doing. Now, talking with your hands is just fine, but understand that if I am so far away from you that you can't even see my mouth move, that's not going to be as good a message. And if I'm so close to you that all you can see is my nose, that's not going to be a good message either. So, yeah. Well, if you need a place for someone to be interviewed so that you can show them what it looks like, I always like to interview people, and I'd be happy to have someone come and be on my radio show. We'll do a Zoom meeting. You can send them the Zoom recording, and then, you know, they'll hear it, they'll see it, whatever.
It's an excellent suggestion. My next book is What Do I Do With These? That's the title.
What do I do with these?
Because
your hands. Oh, it doesn't say what do I do with my hands?
No, it's what do I do with these? It's supposed to be a little provocative. And the point is that as a stand-up in front of an audience without a lectern, and by the way, it's not a podium. Mm-hmm. Podium you stand on. Lectern, you, right? Podium, P-O-D, foot, uh-huh. Right? The Olympic winners, first, second, and third, they stand on the podium. So anyway, if I can train a presenter to get away from the lectern, and to speak, the thing that they're most distracted by is they've been told that you have to point here, you have to wave here. And I teach them the magic around that. And that is what's called home base. Put your hands together, not interlock, put them together. I know this is a radio show. You put them slightly above your belt and it should feel silly. When you're standing in front of thousands of people, that will feel silly. The natural thing then is to use them. And then no longer do you have to think about your hands.
I see.
And no longer do you have to, it's an instinctual thing. Once you develop that instinct of putting your hands right below, right above your waist.
And hands together, one on top of the other.
Right. And because if you have them in your pocket, you're counting your money. If you have your hands behind your back, something else. If you're holding on to a lectern, which I absolutely hate because you hunch over when you're holding on to a lectern, by keeping your hands, bringing your hands to home base, it's the easiest way to use your hands.
Right.
And while you think it looks silly, if you and your listeners will now look at any TV broadcaster who's standing up, their hands are here in front of them, not in their pockets, not behind their back, not by their sides. It's here, ready to use.
Until they go to use them, and then it just floats up like natural, one hand, two hand, whatever. I can gesture, but then I go back to home base.
And you know, it's very easy to do, and it's easier to do from there. Just one of the tools that I give them to focus on the message, mm-hmm. and not about all the chazara that they're dealing with.
Well, now that's fine if you're on a stage and you're walking around. Or even if you're behind a lectern. But when I'm sitting down at a Zoom meeting, if I put my hands, as I've done, and I frequently put them, you know, hand to elbow, elbow to hand, and they're just sitting there, you can't see it on a Zoom meeting. It's below the camera level. But that's okay, because when I go to gesture with it, I'm still coming up into camera level from my core, as it were. Rather than if I've got my hands out here, I'm making my shoulders weird or something. Yeah. So I can see how it could easily translate from walking around on stage to sitting in a Zoom meeting.
We hope it's been successful. And it's not something that I'm restricted by age based on this or travel or what have you, that when I can work, I have maybe an aggregate of maybe 30 attorneys in three firms, a total of 30 attorneys in three firms. they've got to work. They're still doing voir dire. They're still doing interviews. They're doing it by Zoom now, mm-hmm. more than ever, because it cuts down on their time, and they can, everybody knows how to turn on a Zoom, but they're not concentrating. They're still trying to teach them how to look and attend to the person watching you, because it's just not natural.
Right.
It's natural to look down at the picture of the person. So I can see you nod your head, but if I don't see you straight on, then I'm going to be distracted. So they're learning. I mean, they're investing in my time to record them, to practice with them, and to get them to be natural in this environment.
Right, right.
I also have a lot of pictures of people where there's poles coming from their head. There's, I have a picture of a very famous, very big, large man, and he's standing in front of a picture that has two wings by it. And all you don't see the bird, right? And all you see is that. Another one that's got two pictures on either side of them. Another one that's got a frame. I have a very good friend who used to be the president of the U.S. Mint. And he has so much stuff in his image that you can't find his face.
Mm-hmm.
But he judges it by turning around, looking at his desk. Wow, that's an impressive desk. Well, yeah, if I'm sitting at your desk coming to meet you, all of the pictures of you and the various presidents and the famous things you've done, yeah, that's really neat. But if you're in this virtual world or the radio world, it doesn't do you any good. In the virtual world, it's very distracting.
Yeah. Well, part of that is what you're doing, too. So a lot of times what I'm doing is social conversation. And instead of trying to find a place where I can have a blank wall, which is there isn't any in my house.
I can tell.
It's either a window or there's pictures or furniture or something. There are no blank walls. But even if I could find one, I like the fact that when I'm sitting in this group of 15 people and people are chatting, people can go, oh, what's that Lois has got up there? It looks like eggs. I wonder how she did that. And the fact that people can see my shelves, my artwork, my stuff, I do actually stage this. I mean, I actually move things around so that instead of my arm covering up something, I have it so that the something is viewable. And then I took the middle bookcase out so that it's now a blank wall. My head is centered in it. And it is not a professional thing. It's not what I would do if I was a singer or I was on stage acting or doing something like that. But for my social interaction, I like this.
I agree.
I'm comfortable with this.
I agree.
And so, yeah, it's everybody's going to do it slightly different, and that's okay. Yeah. And if the listeners want to know what the heck are we talking about, I encourage you to go to officehours.global and look at some of the shows. Office Hours does a daily 2-hour program, and they're recorded. I think they're up to program number 744 or some such thing. And so the panelists that are on the show, and both Ray and I have been panelists on that show, most of them have worked hard not only on their microphones so that they have a good sound, but also on what the camera sees. And then there's a few restrictions because the show uses what's called lower thirds. It means that rising out of the bottom up to a third of the way up, and then there's writing, there's text below that, and then that slowly goes back down. And when you do that, you want to make sure that your head is not centered in the screen because you're going to chop off your mouth. So anyway, all this all techie stuff. But anyway, it's a fun thing to go and look at the panelists. Look at how they have chosen to present themselves. And you'll find folks like Ray, they're very, very simple. He has a blue background with a little light coming onto it, so it's not quite flat. Colored, it's, you know, exciting. And the rest of him is just well lit, easy to see. When he talks, you can see his mouth move. It's, yeah. And then there are some people who have a distinct personality to what they're doing. And so you'll see them making sure that they're centered when they have to be, and then when they don't have to be, they'll turn to the side and they'll gesture. But that's their style, man. So anyway, it's fun to look at. I encourage you to go watch it, officehours.global. Check it out. See what we're talking about. Well, that went fast, didn't it? Oh, Ray, we don't have very much time left. You're going to have to come back, I think, aren't you?
Lois, this was painless. In fact, I enjoyed it. I'm not surprised. And you're a delightful company, whether it's just one-on-one or we're part of a panel.
And we're not done yet. I just was looking at the clock and going, whoa, we only have 10 minutes left. And we haven't talked about the big thing, which is, what are you doing in the future? Are you going to be on that bird show with Lois? What's all this happening with the bird stuff? I know you're in Florida, so you must have birds. Do you look at birds?
We have. I've probably gotten close to the investment of office hours in bird stuff as a result of birding with Lois.
Tell him the story. Tell him the story, because it's a good story.
Well, I had a simple bird feeder, and it was being attacked by squirrels and infested by wasps, and it was not very productive. And so Lois made a recommendation of this. I don't remember the name.
Droll Yankee.
Droll Yankee. Fantastic device. It holds 5 pounds of birdseed. We're experimenting what's the best for our people. And in the fun thing is that the tiniest of birds can stand on the little wire step and peck away and enjoy themselves. I've sent you a video recently one of 3 doves who has mastered, realizes that he's too heavy, and and the gate shuts when he or she sits on the perch. And so he will fly up, keep his wings flapping like crazy, peck away at it, and then jump down on the bottom and enjoy eating the birdseed with others. We're fascinated by it. We're ready to invest in more. And the birding with Lois bug has started to control our lives. We're very blessed where we live. We're in Central Florida, and we have a very large lake system. And the typical way homes are built in Florida is they dredge and make lakes and make land by dredging out of the limestone out of the lake area and building up the land. We're about 4 or 5 feet above the lake. And that gives us a nice solid land to build the house on. And we now look out at probably 15 acres of lake and a acre and a half of island where the birds nest and they play and they feed and what have you. So we're constantly entertained. My wife and I spend at least an hour every afternoon sitting out there just watching the birds. And it is so much fun.
And beside his house, going past between him and the edge of the lake, there's a walking path. Is that right?
Yes.
And so you can take a stroll down and see not only what's outside your house, but all these other sort of things. And when Ray first contacted us, we've been practicing the Birding with Lois show, trying to get ready for our grand opening, which is Thursday, April 7th.
Yes.
That's the day of this show. You're going to be here. Well, actually, no, it'll be over by now. So anyway, but every Thursday on YouTube, Birding with Lois. But what we found when he was talking to us is he was saying, well, we've got these big black birds that are coming and eating things. Well, we had to figure out what these were. They were grackles. And then it turned out that what he was using was suet, which is seeds inside a solidish sort of cake. And so that had certain problems, and we suggested things like, okay, well, you can just put a big A-frame over the whole thing, and you know, maybe that'll keep this and this. And then somebody said droll Yankee, and we explored that, and that is actually a totally different kind of feeder because it isn't suet at all. It is chips. It is birdseed. And then we had the discussion about what birdseed and all that stuff. But the most fun thing that I saw that Ray has sent to us, he got this droll bird feeder. It's working real well. If the big birds come and land it, it shuts so they can't get it. And so they're not bothering anymore. If a squirrel comes and landed it, it's too heavy. It shuts it. It can't get on anymore. But then he sent us this picture 2 days later after he put it up. Sandhill cranes. Now, I don't know if you know about sandhill cranes, but if they're standing up tall, their beak is about the shoulder level for you. I mean, they're big birds. He's got a pair of sandhill cranes with three babies. And so the sandhill crane, doesn't matter how heavy he is, he's not sitting on that little thing. He's just sticking his beak in there and pulling the seeds out and dropping them on the ground for the babies. So he has this video. I'm going to have to play it on the show sometime, of the sandhill cranes eating the birdseed. But you know, they're so pretty, maybe it's okay.
We're very entertained. We've got recently added two Canadian geese in our yard. And it's quite entertaining. We're not big TV people. We enjoy sitting watching the nature go by. And you've tweaked our interest. And we have progress ahead of us, I hope.
Well, I hope you'll enjoy the show. I'm having fun getting it going. I'm a little terrified right now because we're recording this the day before the show's premiere, and I'm just going, I don't know. But it'll be fine. It will always be fine. So we're out of time, Ray. Any last words you want to give our listeners?
Other than I'm honored to be asked and to be here on your broadcast, I'm a firm believer in community communications, and I think you are doing a fine job, both for your community and your church is very important to you. And so I'm honored to be here, and I'm welcome to do it again sometime.
We will do it again. I'm enjoying talking to you. Well, thank you for being there. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. This is Lois Richter. The program is That's Life. And you're listening at KDRT LP 95.7 in Davis, California.
Thanks, Lois. That was fun.
Thanks, Ray. That was fun. It was.
Send me a link to your radio broadcast, can you?
Sure. But I can just tell it to you, kdrt.org.
Oh, KDRT.
KDRT. KDRT.
Got it.
All right.
Thanks, Lois.
Bye.
Have a good afternoon and break a leg.
That's a mean thing to say.
That's show business.
This is not a phone call. You are on TV. And a weird thing to put on your screen there.
It's part of the training.
You mean because you're a coach.
Thanks, Lois. I got to run.
Bye.
Cheers.
And that was the guest for That's Life, Ray Frankland, here at KDRT LP 95.7 in Davis, California.